Thank you for listening to Torah Media Atlanta. Won't you consider making a donation to help support this important work? Just go to TorahMediaAtlanta.com and click on the donate link. Thank you very much.
All right, let's just get into the verses here at the very end as we complete our study of Rav Hirsch on what hopefully will be our last session in this. We'll see if we get to some in Joshua, but at least as we've been mentioning, just with our regular routine of Rashi, Ramban, Rav Hirsch. So let's pick up the verses in verse 14. Esav has asked that they travel together. Yaakov says, "No, please, you go on. I need to pace myself according to the needs of the flock and of the children who are before me." Yaakov basically says, "I'm not interested. It's not good for me to travel with you." Esav says in verse 15, "Fine, at least let me leave one person with you." Yaakov says, "What persons would that find? Let me find grace in the eyes of my Lord. Not interested. Please let me go." Esav returns on that day to his way to Seir. Verse 16, this is already new for us now in a first, so they split. Yaakov is successfully able to reject his overtures of "let's go together, you go on ahead." Verse 17, so Esav goes in his way to Seir, Yaakov goes Sukkot. So Yaakov journeys to the place called Sukkot, Vayiven lo bayis, and he builds for himself there a house, Ulemikneu asa Sukkot, and for his property, for his cattle, he makes these booths, Sukkot, Al Kain Karashem HaMakom Sukkos. And therefore he calls the name of the place Sukkos. For himself he makes a house, for his animals he makes these Sukkos, and therefore he calls the name of the place Sukkos. Says the version verse 7 in verse 16. Vayashav Lidarko Seir. Esav returns to his way to the place of Seir. This Lidarko is not quite clear. What does it mean that Esav returned on his way? What does it mean on his way to the place called Seir? Perhaps it is significant of the trend of life to which Esav reverted. For this is the last time that we see Yaakov and Esav together. This is it. We're not going to find them again together in the Torah. This episode that we're completing now, Yaakov and Esav together, is the last one. Henceforth, their ways of life diverge completely. Maybe that's what the Torah means when it says, and Esav went on his way. That now the two of them will never again be together. Yaakov going off on his way, Esav going off on his. Just as the whole Gid HaNasha incident awaits its realization only in the distant future, just like the Gid HaNasha, remember, the Yaakov gets hurt, he's maimed, but eventually there'll be a time where he'll be, so to speak, healed, and he'll be able to manage his way through life without the impediment of an Esav. So this meeting of the brothers in brotherly affection was only a sign and indication of how the relationship of Esav and Yaakov will ultimately become in distant future. Meaning that now they embraced and they get along, they split. It doesn't last that way. This is just a little window as to what eventually will be, that Yaakov and Esav will be able to get along and hug and embrace and kiss. But for now, Esav goes off on his way. They split because there isn't that brotherly love. For that time, and for a long time yet, the words still ring. On that very day, Esav returned to his way to Seir, meaning to his usual way. Perhaps he refers to suggest, I don't know. The Torah uses a strange way to say that Esav returned on his way. Why did it mean on his way? Esav refers to suggest, here they came together, this brief meeting, things were present enough, and then they split, sending us into the long exile that we are in. Eventually, Yaakov and Esav will achieve the state that we see described here, but it has not happened yet. Okay, Yaakov, Esav went in his way, Yaakov goes on his way, he comes to the place called Sukkot. Says of first, this was the first real house that Yaakov built for himself, and this indicates that he stayed there for some time, and this place is on the other side of the Jordan, outside of Canaan. So that's where he goes, he settles in the place called Sukkot. Back in the verses, verse 18, Vayovo Yaakov Shalem Ir Shechem. Yaakov comes in complete harmony, completion, literally, to the city all of Shechem, which is in the land of Canaan, when he came from Padan Aram. Vayichanes Pnei Ha'ir, and he encamped in front of the city. Says of her Shalem, in full, harmonious, undiminished completeness. He's just had quite an ordeal. He spent some 20 years with his uncle Lavan. He's now embarked on the journey back to the land of Israel, where he had to meet up, as we've just been studying, with Esav. Yet he arrives now in the land of Israel, in the city of Shechem, completely whole. harmonious, undiminished completeness, in the words of Rav Hirsch, not only in material manners, but also and above all in moral and spiritual matter, especially considering the moral dangers that beset a man who was to make the most strenuous efforts to secure material independence. So that with all that he had to do, just to be materially independent, not to be subject to Esav and his men and his attacks, so to be able to say that I survived all of that morally intact, that with all of the preparations for war that I needed to do, that I was able to maintain my stature, so there Yaakov arrived at the city of Shechem, whole and complete. That quote here from Golda Meir, a famous quote of hers, which is one of the most beautiful quotes, in which she said, "We can forgive the Arabs for murdering our sons, but we can never forgive the Arabs for making our sons into murderers." That we have to become fighters, that we have to take up arms and kill, for that we can't forgive. That you killed us, as Jewish people we can forgive, but not for making us into murderers. So Yaakov here says, "I arrived Shalem." Torah says Yaakov arrived in the city of Shechem, whole and complete, not just with his material goods, but whole and complete as the person who he wants to be, unaffected by that which went into getting him there. He arrived in the way that he wants to be, whole, spiritually, morally, despite all that went into getting him there. Shalem is the expression of the most complete harmony, especially to complete agreement, the complete agreement of external matters with internal ones. And again, how do you know that's what he means? That's what the Torah means. How do I know that? He's saying that's what the word shalem means. Shalem, that wholeness, that completeness of the word, is the most complete harmony, especially when on the external elements is in complete harmony with the internal ones. All true peace, worthy of the name shalom, even of civil life, is not one made according to stereotyped external patterns, but must come out from inside, from the nature and ideal of the harmonious order of the matters of life. Very poetic language, that peace has to really stem from inside. It can't be external, in which somehow we get along, we figure out a deal. That's not true peace. True peace is the expression of that which is internally, morally correct, internally spiritually correct, and then it manifests itself as well on the outside, in which the ideals lived on the outside match those believed to be correct on the inside. That is the concept of shalom, which is why many of the commentators like to speak about that peace for shalom from a Torah perspective is not just the absence of conflict. That's a certain level of peace, that there's no conflict, that you could have two people or a community that gets along, they're in peace. I mean, there's no conflict. They figured out a way to coexist peacefully. But that's just the absence of conflict. True peace is not just where they coexist without conflict, but with in which there's a working together, there's a harmonious way in which the internal values and the external values and the two people together, the two communities together, the people within the community, actively function well together, not just in the absence of war or conflict. And so that's the language of shalom. And therefore Yaakov arrives in Shechem shalom. What do you mean? Who's he fighting? Esav is gone. What does it mean he arrives there shalem? He's shalem, he's whole, he's complete, internally, externally, all of his values, all of his spiritual yearnings are all completely intact. Okay, yeah. Further. Come on in. Yes. Yes. We wanted to switch sides to be.
I like the background better. Okay.
Okay. Verse 19. Vayikan Eschelkas Hasadeh. And he bought the part of the field, Asher Nata Shamoi Halo Miyad B'nei Chamor, the part of the field which he had pitched his tent, he bought it from the sons of Chamor, the father of Shechem. The Mea Ksita, the Torah tells us exactly how much he had actually purchased it for. Vayotzev Sham Mizbeach, and there he erects an altar as a memorial, and proclaims, here on page, make sure you have that single sheet, verse 17, page 1517. There it is.
516.
516, excuse me, thank you. Vayikra lo kel Elokei Yisrael. This is our last verse. So what is, so the, how does the Torah complete this story? He buys himself a plot of land here in Eretz Yisrael. He erects an altar and he calls it Kel Elokei Yisrael. God is the God of Israel. We saw the Ramban had the two different interpretations. Exactly whether or not it was Hashem calling him like a god because he had mastered over the material world. But here, the simple meaning, he called it the Kel Elokei Yisrael. All right, let's see this last piece from Refresh. Ready? Verse 20 on page 515. So he erects there an altar and he calls it God is the God of Israel. Two unusual terms. Erecting an altar is called elsewhere bana or asa. Usually it says he built or he made, and here it uses the language of vayatsev, which means to erect. So Rav Hirsch points out there's an interesting language. It's not the common language for creating an altar. Never hitziv. In fact, you don't find this anywhere else in all of Torah where creating, erecting, building an altar has this Hebrew word vayatsev. Further, otherwise, we read of the patriarchs that after the building of an altar, Vayikra b'shem Hashem, that he calls in the name of Hashem. But here, it's Vayikra lo, and he called for himself, God is the God of Israel. So he's calling for himself as opposed to, and he called in the name of God. So Rav Hirsch points out, the language here is different than it usually is when we find the patriarchs creating, erecting an altar, and calling out to Hashem. We have already indicated above, Rav Hirsch points out, that the relation of Matseva, the concept of an altar, two of them is Beach, the actual altar in the Beis HaMikdash. Matseva is a rock or single stone offered by nature, corresponds to the idea of a memorial of what God has done for us, and was therefore Ahuva La'avos, was beloved by the fathers, the forefathers, who had to recognize and teach God above all, first in his management and ruling in nature and human affairs. Let's go over this again for a second. There are different types of ways of constructing an altar. A matseva, which is the type of altar we're discussing here, was usually a single stone. What's the significance of using a single stone as the base of your altar? So it first points out, that's offered by nature. It doesn't have man's handiwork. If I build something out of lots of different stones, then I'm creating, out of the material that the world has offered me, I'm creating something new. I'm building, so to speak, a sturdy altar, my handiwork. If instead I have a single large stone that I make into an altar, then I've really simply taken that which was already provided for me. And I have not used my hands to recreate. We discussed this a lot, if you remember the story of Tower of Babel, how they wanted to build, they wanted to take that which was there and form something new that was not purely natural, but that we've now reshaped and redone. So says Rav Hirsch, what kind of altar are we discussing over here? A matseva. Again, read that paragraph again. Not the paragraph, that line starting with the word, the Hebrew word matseva, the rock. It's four lines down into this paragraph of verse 20. It's five, actually. Matseva, the rock or single stone offered by nature, corresponds to the idea of a memorial of what God has done for us. If you use that type of rock for your altar, you're displaying, you've done this for me. I'm not involved in the construction of this altar. I didn't take many little stones and construct it with plaster or skillfully putting them together. I simply took the single large slab that you provided. So that corresponds to what God has done for us. It's in recognition to something in which I say, you've done this for us, for me. And was therefore ahuva la'avos. It was beloved by the forefathers. The forefathers preferred that type of altar, a single stone, one which demonstrated you, God, have done for me. Because why did the others prefer that? Because who had to recognize and teach God above all? Because their role in the world was introducing this concept of God. So they always wanted to focus on what it was that God has done for us. First in his management and ruling in nature and in human affairs. So in order to demonstrate that, the others preferred this single stone altar that said, this is all from you. In your human affairs management and in your management of nature. What men did, their actions, was more a revelation of man than of God, who had not yet given the Tarryag Mitzvos, to reveal him in all the action of human lives lived and regulated in accordance with his revealed will. Again, meaning, when the Torah is given, then mankind's actions, living through the precepts of the Torah, is an expression of godliness. Because the way that we live, the morals that we live by, the laws that regulate our behavior, are all manifestations of God's will. That's after the Torah has been given, and then the human being takes that divine will and lives his life according to it. Before the Torah has been given, man's actions are not as natural a revelation of God, because the way he's living his life is not following the precepts that God has given him, or before the giving of the Torah. So therefore, that's why the Avos preferred that single slab of stone rather than many stones creating an altar, which is a manifestation of man's handiwork in the world, because at that stage in history, man's handiwork was not as natural a revelation of God's presence. Let's read that again. What men did, their actions, was more a revelation of man than of God, who had not yet given the Tarryag Mitzvos, the 613 Mitzvos, to reveal him in all the actions and human lives lived and regulated in accordance with his revealed will. Now that it's been revealed, God's will through the Torah, man's actions and his life that's lived is a revelation of God. But before the Torah was given, says Rav Hirsch, much less so. It was a revelation of man more than it was a revelation of God. So that with the Avos, when it came to the forefathers, a matseva, an altar which is a single slab altar, had its fully justified place next to the Mizbeach, next to the Mizbeach of Hashem, in the base, what would be eventually the Beis HaMikdash, meaning the man-made erection expressing, page 516, the devotion of human activity to God. Eventually, the man-made Mizbeach will express this idea of the human devotion to God through his actions. Corresponding to these ideas, the matseva was preferably meant for nisachim, was meant for the libations, for acknowledging the gifts of blessing as coming from God. But the mizbeach was for korbanos. In the Beis HaMikdash, the mizbeach, the altar, was going to be for sacrifices, for dedicating the whole of life to him. With Matan Torah, when the Torah is going to be given, the Mizbeach not only came to the foreground, now not only does the Mizbeach, the man-built altar, not only does it become more prominent, but Matseva was completely absorbed into it. The concept of this Matseva out in a person's backyard becomes completely absorbed. The only way now to offer is in the Mizbeach, in the Beis HaMikdash, with the form of this altar, which is paying homage to acknowledging our fate, what we receive as coming from God, separated from devoting the whole activity of our internal and external lives to fulfilling His expressed will, became actually sinful and was prohibited. Again, meaning, once God's will is revealed, now having an altar in your backyard becomes forbidden. Now there's a shift. Before the Torah is given, every Jew can have a little altar in their backyard, a matseva, in which they can express their human actions to God. Once the Torah is given, then it becomes centralized. All of your actions will be expressed through the Beis HaMikdash and the Mizbeach there, and it now becomes prohibited for you to express your own will through your own desire to serve in your own way through your backyard. Again, reading it again. Paying homage to and acknowledging our fate and what we receive as coming from God, separated from devoting the whole activity of our internal and external lives to fulfilling His express will. Meaning, if you separate that with a matzeva, which is separating the whole carbon aspect of the animal that's brought, became actually sinful and prohibited. For from that time, meaning the time the Torah is given, God no longer wished to be regarded and revealed in what we get and become from Him, but in what He gets from us and becomes to us. No longer is what we do to be the product of our fate, but our fate, our weal and woe itself, a product of what we do and what we refrain from doing, our actions to be dependent on Him, to be dictated by Him. To a little bit more, and then we'll go back and try to explain. It's very, very poetic language. And in terms of once the divine will has been revealed, then our actions are expressions of that will through fulfilling that. Matseva disappears, the concept of this single stone, Matseva disappears, and Mizbeach alone, which is constructed by man, becomes the one common place for Ola u'mincha, for Zevach u'nesachim, for the fully burnt offerings, for the flour offerings, for sacrifices that are eaten, for wine libations. The altar, which by its construction and symbolic meaning proclaims the mission, the way that it's constructed, and all of its meaning proclaims that mission of, by man's active life, through the divine fire of the law, the all-consuming Eishtas, as the Torah is referred to.
You skipped a line.
I'm sorry, thank you. By man's active life, through the Torah, to raise the earth to Har El, to the Mount of God. Meaning we take the earth and build an altar out of it, to the Mount of God, on which the divine fire of the law, the all-consuming Eishtas, as Ariel, is meant to master everything on earth, and to be the far-reaching, illuminating revelation of God on earth. We take the earth and construct an altar out of it. Not the single slab stone. We're going to build it with elaborate design an altar and take from that earth and create our mission that through man's life, through the Torah, raise the earth to a mountain of God in which the divine fire will master everything. With Jacob's entry into the future land of this Torah, now Yaakov has for the first time entered into the land of Israel with his family. He's been there before, growing up in his father's house. He's been exiled for the last 20 years. He now returns. Jacob preparatorily indicates this turning point in Vayotzev Sham Matseva, in that there he erected a altar. In erecting there a Mizbeach as a Matseva, as a memorial, expressing thereby that here, on this soil, that which men have to build is to be the monument of the revelation of God, that God is to be shown by and in man's actions. That here it is not only a question of submitting to or thanking for that which one receives from the hand of God, but to change everything earthy and material to something higher, giving satisfaction to God by fulfilling His will. Okay, that's pretty complex. Ready? Let's see if we can figure this out a little bit. The standard matzeva that was offered by the Avos, by the forefathers, was simply that slab of stone. And that represented, you've provided. It's not about me and my actions. It's about me, the human being, recognizing my smallness and recognizing that that which I have is provided for by you. And therefore, this offering that I give is in gratitude to that. So that if you were to watch a human provide such a sacrifice or an offering, if it was represented by what we call a matseva, it would be, and you would stop by and you would say, you'd look at it, what's taking place right there? You would say, what's taking place is man recognizing with gratitude that which God has provided him for. Say, is that a good thing or a bad thing? It's a great thing. Right? Wonderful. Man's recognizing that that which he has comes from God. There's a limitation in that all that he's doing is saying, that which I have comes from you. What's man's responsibility with what he does with his life in this relationship? It's not touching on that. It's simply saying, everything that I have comes from you, and I recognize you as the beneficiary to that which I have. The higher level is, I'm going to create and do something. And in the offering that I give you is not simply acknowledging you as the one who provided me with something, but that I'm dedicating my life to revealing your will in the way that I live it. I'm a player in this. I'm not just a receiver saying thank you. I am living a life that's an expression of your will. Right, to take it into the human form, it's the difference between, let's take an example, a child, an 8-year-old, who becomes of age to be able to say to their parents, thank you for my birthday present. In which the relationship is one purely of, you're 8, I'm the grown up. I give you a birthday present, and you're now of age to be able to say, thank you. I wouldn't have had this toy car without you. What responsibility does a child have to the toy car? No, he's saying, you provided this with me. I wouldn't have had it without you, and I thank you. What about when that child graduates high school and college and goes to medical school and becomes a doctor, and then the child...
My daughter's doing right now.
And then the child says to the parent upon graduation and says, you put me through medical school, I'm going to be the best doctor this country's ever seen. I'm going to save lives, I'm going to develop cures, I'm going to live a life that's going to be a model of ethics and efficiency and creativity, and I'm going to be an expression of all of the dreams that you had in putting me through medical school. I'm going to do that. That's a very different thank you. That's not just an 8-year-old saying, you gave me a car, I thank you for it, I wouldn't have had it without you. It's saying, you gave me this life, i.e., you made me into a doctor, you provided me with everything that I needed to have this skill, I am now going to take that training and that skill that you provided, and I'm going to be an expression of everything that you yearned and hoped for in doing so, in making you proud. And that, it's not just thank you, it's, and that's going to influence what it is I'm going to do with this. The matseva, this concept of that offering, which is a single slab offering, is an offering of, you provided this with me. It doesn't bring man into the equation, other than recognizing what you've done and thanking you. This concept of mizbeach, different word, is a man-constructed altar that says, you gave me all of the tools, look at what I'm going to do with them. So that I'm also thanking you for them, but dedicating to live a life, which is more than just in my example of being a doctor, being a good doctor that's going to save people, that my life will be an expression of the divine will. That really happens post-giving of the Torah. Prior to the giving of the Torah, where we don't have the mitzvahs, we don't have the mechanism, meaning we, the Avram, Yitzchak, Yaakov, they knew Torah, but it wasn't given formally of, in that sense of, this way of life is expression of that. So we have there this concept of matseva, of that single slab recognition that what I have is yours. And that was the role to teach the world that concept. Teach the world that what you have comes from God. After the Torah is going to be given, it's going to shift into man's responsible for his actions to be an expression of godliness. And therefore the personal matseva shifts into the background, becomes forbidden for a Jew to offer sacrifices in his backyard. The only way to do it is in the context of the Beis HaMikdash, which represents this other idea of Mizbeach, man-constructed altar, in which man dedicates his life to the will of God. What Rav Hirsch is pointing out here, and again, he's coming from the grammatics of Vayotzev Shom Matseva, which he understands to be a combination of these two ideas. Let's see if you can figure out exactly where that's coming from. Oh, no, it's Vayotzev Shom Mizbeach. That's where it's coming from. Look, if you look carefully at verse 20, in the Hebrew side, Vayotzev Shom Mizbeach is a mixing up a phrase. Vayotzev, the root of the word Vayotzev is Matseva. So usually that word is Vayotzev Shom Matseva. He erected a Matseva. Except the Hebrew language in verse 20 switches from Vayotzev Shom a mizbeach. He erected there, using the word that should apply in a verb to the single slab stone, which represents, thank you, you are the cause of whatever it is that I have. But what he built instead, using that verb, was the mizbeach, the man-made, more complex altar. So what Rav Hirsch points out over here, let's read that again, is that this is the switch. As Yaakov enters into the land, which will eventually be the place in which the Jewish people will be charged with that idea of dedicating their life to a certain ideal, he begins by shifting out of a matseva into the form of a mizbeach, a man-built altar. Reading that again, so with Jacob's entry, just the last couple lines, in that paragraph, with Yaakov's entry into the future land of this Torah, where man will express God's will through their life, Yaakov preparatorily indicates this turning point in Vayotzav Shom Matseva from what should have been erecting a Matseva type altar, in erecting there a Mizbeach as a Matseva, but instead he erects a man-made type of altar as a memorial, expressing thereby that hence, on this soil, that which men have to build is to be the monument of the revelation of God. And now man has to play a role in the way that he builds, so to speak. That God is to be shown by and in men's actions. That when man acts, the observers see godliness in the way that he acts. That here it is not only a question of submitting to or thanking for that which one receives from the hand of God. That's our 8-year-old. It's not just saying thank you, but to change everything earthy and material to something higher, giving satisfaction to God by fulfilling His will. I'm going to take that car, take that medical school education, and fulfill your will through it. That's the shift, and Yaakov represents that shift here in the verbiage that the Torah uses, Vayotzav Shom Mizbeach. He began to erect, but what he erected was a Mizbeach, not an altar. Nice. Continuing on, therefore also Vayikralo, he called to himself. He proclaimed this conception of making a Matzevah to Mizbeach to himself and his people. And he said, we're shifting now. We're shifting from simply a world in which Jew recognizes that which he has comes from God into Jew is now charged with living his life according to that. The patriarchs were Karu B'Shem Hashem. They called in the name of God. They proclaimed to the world the name of God, proclaimed to the people that God is not merely the one who created the world thousands of years ago, but is He who still bears heaven and earth and from whom still every present and coming moment emanates directly. That's what the forefathers taught the world. And it's a high level. That level that we need still today to recognize that everything that we have comes from God. All of our gifts, not just that God created the world, but continues to infuse it with life. But what Yaakov wanted to proclaim by erecting this Mizbeach as a Matzeva was not yet for mankind in general. Mankind wasn't ready for this yet. That he had primarily first to proclaim for himself and his own that Kel, that God, that the Almighty Director from whom everything in heaven and earth originated, is to be and wishes to be Elokei Yisrael. Yisrael, God, the Jewish people's lawgiver, judge, and God, recognizable not only in Israel's fate and history, but above all in Israel's deeds. What is, again, in the verse, back in the verse, what does Yaakov call God here? Kel Elokei Yisrael, God, the God of Israel. That through the Jewish people, through our actions, through our history, your name will become recognized. You will see, people will see you, God, in us, and in our actions. And this thought remains to the present day the primary heritage of the family of Yaakov, and still has to accomplish its full effect and be fully realized by us. We're not there yet. Where when the world looks at the Jewish nation, they see God. They see an expression of what godliness really should be. That is our task. That's our heritage, and not yet fully realized by us, says Rav Hirsch. Belief and hope, comfort and strength, these Matseva thoughts are what, outside of Judaism, religion expects from the relation of man to God. Meaning, what is relief? Relief, what is religion about? It's about belief. It's about hope. It's about comfort. It's about receiving strength. And these are preferably where its success lies, in helping people when their lives are wrecked and in times of trouble. Who was it? Marx, I think, said it, right? Religion is a crutch for the world. I forget exactly how he had said it. That religion is a crutch for people who can't manage the difficulties of life. So they have religion. God's will, God this, God that. It's not for the sophisticated. Those are those who in the Enlightenment era, when people coming out of the Enlightenment era and the after effects, rejected religion and said, who needs it? We have science. Religion was only for those who couldn't manage. So in Rav Hirsch's language, outside of Judaism, religion experts believe that the relationship of man to God is simply one of belief and hope. You need to believe in God. You need to have hope in God. It brings you comfort and it brings you strength. in its success, meaning the success of religion lies in helping people when their lives are wrecked and in times of trouble. Without naming any other religions. Mm-hmm. And we're affected by this also. Religion is something you turn to when you're in trouble. That's where it first says, is out there in the world. But the complete subordination of the whole of one's life in full vigor to the will of God, but that you live your life in good times completely subjugated to the will of God, keeping His law as the one tree of life for the individual and the nation, to recognize that a life that's lived without God and religion is not a life, not because I'm suffering, not because I lost my job, not because I have tragedy. Intrinsically, a life without God is not a life, making every phase of life ruled by the revealed norm of His will. In short, complete, free-willed, cheerful obedience to the divine Torah, this forming the whole of human life to a matseva, to the revelation of God, that is, up till now, a treasure which has only been cherished by the house of Yaakov. And only in the far distant future will the nation say, Yorunu midrachav v'nilcho b'archosav, teach us its ways and we will go after its paths. There will be a time when the nations of the world will say that also. But right now, the way that the expert, so to speak, says the first on religion, see religion as a source of comfort and support in times of trouble, as a place to have hope in and belief in, but that it's in good times a place to direct every being and fiber of your being to live a life that's filled with revelation of God, that lives a life that actively expresses God's will in the world. That is the heritage of the Jewish people, says Rav Hirsch, the treasure which has been cherished by the house of Yaakov and eventually will be that of the entire world population, but not yet. Last paragraph, according to the opinion of Rabbi Yehuda, that Gid Hanasha, that this prohibition of the sinew, was not only nichtav bimkomo, not only was it written here in the story of Yaakov, but that already immediately after the event was applicable to the Bnei Noach, observed by all of Yaakov's descendants, then all that we have written above would be even more pertinent. Meaning, there's a dispute amongst the sages whether or not the prohibition of the Jewish people eating of that sinew, did it begin with Yaakov's children? Or was it written here, but there was no tradition of it until the Torah was actually given and attached to this? So Rabbi Yehuda holds, one of the sages of the Talmud, Rabbi Yehuda holds that already the children of Yaakov and all of the Bnei Noach, from that point on, immediately were obligated in such a prohibition. So it says, according to that opinion, then with this Gid Hanasha, with this prohibition of that sinew, the beginning would have been made of thinking of God, no longer only by the dead matseva stone, but by the living, happiness-giving acts of mitzvah. Already you'd have a concept of mitzvah, living your life in a certain accordance, not just giving thanks. All the more pregnant with meaning would be the Vayotzev Shalom Mizbeach. Okay, so there he throws in, if you already have mitzvahs coming into effect already now, that would even express this idea even more, that we're shifting now out of simply offerings of thanks into offerings of, I dedicate my life to this certain ideal. Okay, that completes the writings of Rav Hirsch on this paragraph that we've done. We've got lots of other things to do. We'll see you again, as I mentioned, maybe some other things. Let's just, so Yaakov and Esav part ways, and as Rav Hirsch concludes this last beautiful piece, which we did today, that brings Yaakov into the land of Israel, no longer just filled with gratitude for what he has, but prepared to dedicate his life to an ideal, which is a much higher level. It's a very beautiful point that he's bringing out here, the different forms of a way in which man interacts, so to speak, with God. One is simply as the all-powerful, you have everything and gave me whatever it is that I have, which is a high level, but it's within the high level, the lower level, it's simply an element of gratitude and thanks versus the dedication of one's life to living in certain ideals. And that's what Yaakov is introducing now, foreshadowing what will eventually be the primary mode of operation of the Jewish people, which is not just giving thanks, but actually a dedication of one's life. Okay. That's the parach, everyone.
For those of you who do catch up online, with this class, and if you access it through Torah Media Atlanta, you should be aware that Yisrael Killian, who runs Torah Media Atlanta, reached out because donations to that site are down. Those of you who do take advantage of it, I would suggest making a donation online when you do use it so that he can continue that site.